Right Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Phil Williams, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Right Side Radio. Listen, folks, we have got a great show going today, and it has been full to the gills. So we talked a lot about things that are going on with the Department of Justice not liking dissent, and therefore they're basically chilling the opportunities for free speech. We talked about the internet police, and now we're going to get into the questions of mask mandates and other topics of a similar sort. Going to bring on a friend of mine, State Representative Andrew Sorrell. Andrew is currently serving in the 3rd District of the Alabama House of Representatives, and he's also a candidate statewide for state auditor. State Representative Sorrell, thanks for being on the show today, bud.
Well, it's good to be on with you. It's good to see you in your office there a week or two ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you came over here and spoke to the Republican women who actually were dining just down the hall from my office. And yeah, good to see you that day, and look forward to having you back. But let me ask you something. I'm looking at a case right now, Andrew, and this, you know, we get a lot of talk about things that DeSantis is doing down in Florida, right? Which I see as leadership more often than not. It's flying under the radar, but I've got a story that I just pulled off of Channel 25 WPBF down in Florida, and they were reporting, and I didn't realize this because no one else is talking about it, that apparently there's been attempts to, you know, Governor Ron DeSantis issued an executive order allowing parents to opt out of mask mandates in schools. And there, of course, were immediate lawsuits. And one of those requested that the executive order be enjoined. Well, the courts have ruled that they will not enjoin the mask mandate opt-out. And so, in other words, it stays in place. And I think that's a short-term victory. It doesn't mean the case is over, but it does mean that the judge does not see fit to just stop things, that he's going to let things play out. You've got a bill right now, don't you, I believe, along with several other members of the House that deals with masks. And tell us about that for a second.
So, perfect segue, because my bill is actually modeled after Governor Ron DeSantis' executive order. Now, I applaud and appreciate what Governor DeSantis is doing in Florida to protect medical freedom. My preference is always for the legislature to pass the bill rather than something to be done by executive order. That's why I chose to go this direction. I think the people in Alabama deserve to see how their legislators stand on mask mandates. And my bill is not anti-mask. And that's an unfair criticism that people in the media have made. It's not at all anti-mask. It's anti-mask mandate. It's a very important difference, because I support parents' right to have their children wear a mask to school if they want, just as I expect them to support my right to not have my child wear a mask in school. So the bill was very simple. It said no mask mandates in school. Local school board can't pass a mask mandate. And if they do, there had to be an enforcement mechanism in there, because we've passed too many bills in Alabama. There were good bills like Senate Bill 267, the anti-vaccine passport bill. Wasn't enough teeth in it. If we're going to pass a bill, let's put an enforcement mechanism in it. So mine said, all right, you're going to get a cut in your grant funding. If you choose to violate the anti-mask mandate bill, you will get a cut in your funding. So the status of the bill is, I actually introduced it in the special session we had a week ago for prisons. I had been calling on Governor Ivey to include my bill in the call of the special session, because, as you know from your time in the legislature, if it's in the call of a special, it passes with a simple majority. If it's not in the call of a special, it takes a two-thirds vote in both chambers, if you can even get the bill heard in committee, which mine ended up not getting heard in committee at all. So I did introduce the bill on the Tuesday, the second day of the special session, just like I said I would. I said I was going to introduce the bill whether or not it was in the call of a special, because we need to at least make that effort to show people there's somebody in Alabama trying to stand up for their medical freedom.
Well, I think that's huge. So let me ask you this. First of all, you do have co-sponsors, I believe, don't you? If so, who are your co-sponsors right now?
So I did not have time to get co-sponsors on the bill. Okay. For the simple reason of we were not in session, so I wasn't able to get people to physically sign it. And then when I got there, I just basically dropped the bill. However,
okay,
I did have many legislators come and say they supported it. Representative Randy Wood, Representative Lynn Greer called me. I know Tommy Haynes, Richie Horton. There's too many to name. There were a lot of people that were supportive of the legislation.
Well, and I would hope that's the case. And so, you know, one of the things that troubles me is the legislature has been, and I'm a former state senator, so I can speak to the issues, knowing full well what it's like to operate on the inside, all right? And this is a question of leadership, in my opinion. It's the rank and file has to say something, but if the leadership won't cooperate with the rank and file's efforts, then nothing happens. And one of the things that frustrates me is all through 2020, the legislature was, for the most part, silent. I mean, there was no activity. There was no clamoring for the governor to call them into special session to do something in the pandemic. The governor wound up taking executive actions at times that were really supposed to be legislative actions. She just did it rather than call y'all in. And then on top of that, ain't nobody down there right now really fighting to level the playing field and allow the legislature to have a say-so in emergency proclamations like we're seeing right now. And on top of that, then we have mask mandates that some parents would like to opt out of or at least have a say-so in. And it's going to take action like yours, but it's going to take a whole lot more than just you by yourself. So where do you see this going?
You have very accurately assessed the situation in Montgomery. And I hate to admit it, you're exactly right, because right now the legislators can simply say, oh, no, we didn't do the mask mandates. That was your local school board. We didn't have anything to do with that. Oh, no, we didn't shut the state down, tell people all kinds of unconstitutional things, like you can't go to church and you can't open your small business and you can't peacefully assemble in groups of 10 or more. You can't leave your house except for approved activities. But that wasn't us telling you that. That was the state health officer. You know, and it was always like shifting the blame and not taking responsibility. But just because we weren't responsible for taking those actions didn't mean that we're not responsible to take actions that would have fixed those problems. Right? Yeah. The state health officer, I think, needs to be appointed by the governor. He needs to be accountable. The state health officer isn't even accountable to the governor right now.
Not at all.
Legislature cannot call itself into special session. That's a major problem. You could have all 140 legislators wanting to be in session, but unless the governor signs the paper, it's not going to happen.
Yep.
We let the governor basically act unchecked, shut the state down. Legislature never spoke on that. So many issues that needed to be addressed, and all we managed to get done in the 2021 regular session was the anti-vaccine passport bill, which I think was too weak, didn't even protect employees from employers, only protected customers. And we managed to pass a really good bill by Representative Jamie Keel that said, if you shut down, if any business is allowed to remain open, all businesses have to be allowed to remain open under the same occupancy parameters. We got two little bills done. There were probably eight more good bills we needed to do that we just didn't address.
Oh, I know there were. And it was some of the, and I'm going to call it useless, even though some would argue with that, but it was some useless bills like gambling and expansion of casino operations, giving monopolies for casinos to the people who've been breaking our laws for years, took up 2 weeks of legislative time. Meanwhile, stuff that we needed to have happen, like pandemic-related issues that have driven the economy into the ground and now we're bouncing back, those things were left laying on the table. But so that being said, your bill as introduced, was that going to be reintroduced now for the regular session, or is it already going to be considered a pre-filed bill at this point?
So I have not pre-filed it for the regular session. When I agreed to do this bill, I was approached by the Unmask Our Kids group out of Huntsville, and they said, can you do the bill? I said, y'all, I have 18 bills I'm already planning to carry in regular session. I really don't have room for another one. But I said, I'll tell you what I will do. I'll try to do it in a special session because that would be my only bill in special session. So okay. I introduced it in special. I have not decided yet if I'm going to introduce it in the next special session or not. I'm still calling on the governor to include it in the redistricting special session. If we're already in Montgomery, it's not going to cost taxpayers anything extra to have us consider a couple more bills dealing with our dealing with our medical freedom. So the long answer to your short question is, I don't know if I'm going to do it in regular or not. If not, I'll try to find somebody else to handle the bill. I've got a whole lot of other liberty and freedom bills I'm already working on, like constitutional carry is going to be a big focus of mine for the 2022 session as well.
All right, worthy cause. So that being said, whether you carry it or somebody else, I mean, I'm going to encourage as many sponsors as possible, because once you have somebody's name attached to it, they're more likely to be advocating for the bill to get in committee and get out on the floor. So I'm hopeful that we could see that happen. But hey, Andrew, can you hang on? By the way, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about the run for auditor and whether there's any potential parts of government you see as being necessary to be checked up on by an auditor's office. Great, man. Thank you. State Representative Andrew Sorrell, currently serving in the House of Representatives in District 3 right here in the listening area, and then running for state auditor as well. We'll be right back here. Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. You hang on. There's more. News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. You can listen to us live online too by going to rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org, and just click listen live, and wherever you is, there we is. All right, folks, that was I love that bump music, by the way. That's I think that was Stone Temple Pilots doing Interstate Love Song. That's a cool song. All right, going back to the phones right now with State Representative Andrew Sorrell. Andrew, so, hey, man, we covered down on some issues related to mask mandates and things, and we got a mixed bag around the state. I'll just say this real quickly for the benefit of the audience and then change the subject with you for a second, but like Madison City Schools, they have announced they're going to continue their mask mandate after they get back from the fall break. University of Alabama has extended theirs through October 29th, even though they're not required in Bryant-Denny Stadium. State health officials are actually urging schools to keep mask mandates, but yet Dothan City and Houston County, they have both dropped their mask mandates in the last few days. So that's an interesting mixed bag approach, but all around the state, folks. But listen, you're also running for the state auditor's position, a unique position that kind of flies under the usual radar. It's not as glossy as governor or lieutenant governor, but it's a pretty important job. And you've talked about it on the show before, but I need to know this. So in the role of state auditor, is there a department you want to audit? Is there some place you want to take? I mean, I know it deals with election registrars also, but is there some place where you want to see property investigated when you get in?
So I think that the property is being adequately investigated right now. I mean, you keep track of over $1 billion of state-owned property, everything that cost $500 or more when it was originally purchased is tracked by the state auditor's office until it is eventually disposed of. Now, there's 176 different state boards and agencies that you go in and you audit their property. So there are some concerns I have with some of the loss reports. Some of this stuff is disappearing. It's like employee fired, did not return laptop. Okay, well, we need to go get our laptop back. I mean, that's just a theft. If an employee doesn't return property when they lose their job, that's just stealing from the taxpayers of Alabama. So we got to work on that. But it's bigger than that. It's bigger than just property, because we're talking about what the state auditor does. But what does the state auditor not do? That's just as important. The state auditor right now does not do financial audits in Alabama. I think that's a mistake. I had a bill drafted this year that would have made Alabama's state auditor's office much more similar to Mississippi's state auditor's office. Now, let me just say this. How often do you hear Alabama needs to be more like Mississippi? All right, we don't say that real often, right? But in this case, it's true. Because Shad White is the auditor of Mississippi. He's a young go-getter over there. I follow him on Facebook. Phil, every time I get on his Facebook page, like every week, the guy is finding so-and-so embezzled $300,000 from the county commission. So-and-so embezzled $100,000 from the school board. So-and-so stole money from the like underprivileged children's food fund. I mean, terrible, terrible stuff. In the auditor's office in Mississippi, they actually have people with a badge that can go in and arrest them, and then they prosecute them. And I'm telling you, the taxpayers over there love it. Now, when was the last time you heard about something like that happening in Alabama? It doesn't happen, because we have a weak state auditor. And I don't mean the person in the position. I mean the position itself needs to be strengthened to do a better job for the taxpayers.
Well, let me ask you this. So, you know, one of the things that people may not recognize is we have the state auditor, but we also have the Department of Public Examiners. So is part of what you're saying that that is done by Mississippi, is that something that's also held within the Department of Public Examiners separate from the auditor here in the state of Alabama? How does that jibe?
That's 100% correct. The Department of Public Examiners is the ones who does the financial audits in Alabama. They're going to go in and check, you know, like your universities, for instance. I was speaking to the CFO of a university in Alabama, and he said, Andrew, the Department of Public Examiners sometimes will run so far behind on their audits that we have to go out and hire an independent auditor to come in and audit us, or we lose our bond rating. And if we haven't had an audit within, I forget what he said, like the past year, we can't renew a bond. So they'll hire an independent auditor, use taxpayer money to pay for it, and then 3 months later, the Department of Public Examiner shows up, and boom, they got to go through a second audit. It's just a waste of time and money because the department runs behind. So to give you some perspective on the different sizes, the state auditor's office has 9 employees. It's very small. Some of those employees are part-time. The Department of Public Examiners employs over 250 people. That's where the real meat of the auditing is going on in Alabama right now. I say the Department of Public Examiners needs to be put under, we don't need to abolish it, we just need to move the supervision to the state auditor.
I got you. Well, and that's going to wind up facing some pushback, I would imagine, among members of the legislature, because Rachel Riddle, who is in charge, I believe, of the Department of Public Examiners, worked for a long time with LFO, the Legislative Fiscal Office. She's well known to members of the legislature. And I think, don't they in some way fall under legislative services agencies or something to do with Othney Latham, who runs that down there, which is also kind of affiliated with the legislature? Are they tied together?
They're absolutely tied together. So right now, the Department of Public Examiners reports to a board made up of State House and State Senate members. And so, in other words, you're asking the legislature to vote to have less power themselves, power back over the state auditor.
That's it. All right. Well, it's going to be an interesting dynamic, but I do believe, and you've got, you know, there's other folks running in your race, but I do believe you've got a great platform. So listen, Andrew, we're about to run out of time here on this segment, so tell the folks where they can find out more information about you if they want to.
Two good ways. Find me on Facebook, Andrew Sorrell for State Auditor, and we spell Sorrell, S-O-R-R-E-L-L. Also on the internet, my website, andrewsorrell.com. A lot of good information about my positions on a number of different issues.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for your time today. We appreciate what you're doing, and hopefully we can see some more movement on some of these mask bills and other things you've got going on for the next legislative session. Hey, folks, that was State Representative Andrew Sorrell, who's also a statewide candidate for a state auditor's position in the next election cycle, and he serves House District 3 over in the Shoals, right here in the listening area. Appreciate him being on. All right, we are up against the break. When we come back, we're going to open up the phones. You want to call in? 866-494-9866. What do you think about government censorship? What do you think about your First Amendment rights being chilled by an overreaching attorney general? Lots of things happening in the news right now. We can talk about those, mask mandates, and anything else you want to. 866-494-9866. We will be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, coming down to the final half hour of the afternoon. We have had some big doings today, let me just tell you. And folks, it's not going to stop. The news keeps going, if you know what I mean. And I just appreciate the fact that you are in an audience, or you are a part of an audience of what we call Right Side Ruffians, people who look around the world, see what's happening, recognize liberals for what they are, know your constitutional rights, and then are willing to say, you know what, not on my watch. That's an important piece. The not on my watch has got to happen more and more. Hey, if you want to call in, 866-494-9866, 866-494-9866. We could just talk about what you want to talk about. We've covered some things today in my triple dipper for the day. We had the fact that the Department of Justice does not like dissent. And the recap of that was literally that Attorney General Merrick Garland, who promised when he came into office that he would not weaponize or politicize the Department of Justice. Well, what's he done? He has weaponized and politicized the Department of Justice in such a way as to potentially put a chilling effect, is what the legal term is. There's a thing called the chilling effect doctrine that was something that was founded out of Supreme Court cases back during the era of McCarthyism. That said that where the and I'm paraphrasing here, but where the actions of government are such that they create a, quote, chilling effect upon people to pursue their rights of freedom of speech, that even if the punitive measures are not actually applied, the mere fact that they were threatened, that alone could become an infringement or a chilling upon freedom of speech. That's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what's happening right now. Folks, if you want to call and talk about that, we're here for it. Facebook police. The internet police. What do you think about the fact that we have a Facebook whistleblower who came out with some stuff that was interesting? You know, the fact that, like, you know, they had their own research that already showed that some of what they were doing was harmful to young teens, that they were putting profit above people at every turn. But yet she also began to go a step further and get into the concept of whether or not the government should be allowed to mandate censorship on online platforms. And if the government goes down that kind of road, well, then who decides what is misinformation? And so I'm just telling you, there's some leery things out there when you consider that over 70% of the American public gets its news, not just social media, hey, I'm talking to my buddies, here's a picture of my grandkids, news from Facebook and Twitter. That's a whole different ballgame when you think about it that way. And the last thing we talked about is mask mandates. Around the state, we have a spotty kind of a patchwork quilt, if you will, of different communities handling mask mandates in schools. Even our University of Alabama has got some continuation of their mask mandate policies. No mask required inside Bryant-Denny Stadium, but yet you got to have a mask on inside certain buildings. It's a patchwork quilt, folks. But I see I got a call right now. Let me go to line five and get Kirby from Harvest. Hey, Kirby, Phil Williams here on Right Side. What's on your mind?
Hey, Phil. I just have been reading in my Bible and wanted to tell you some verses that those of you who read the scriptures can just take comfort in through all this, you know, corruption in government and things. In the first section, I'm just going to give you the references so I don't take up all y'all's time, is Psalm chapter 94, verses 17 through 20. 20 is kind of the punchline in that, but I'd read 17 through 20. And then the second one is Psalms 125, verse 3. And what those verses, you know, Jesus, years ago the Lord told Israel that he is really king, even though Israel wanted a king. The Lord said, I'm king. And you can read those sections, and it just reminds us where authority comes from, and we don't really understand how God is being really patient with these people, but we can always go and pray to the Lord about what's going on. And I just thank y'all for having me on. Have a good day.
All right, Kirby. Hey, thanks for that. That's a wonderful word, and I appreciate you bringing it to us. Kirby from Harvest here on Right Side Radio, and thank you for that. What a great country we live in when we can have people call in and do exactly what Kirby just did. And I believe that. So listen, folks, you want to call in 866-494-9866, 866-494-9866. So Copper, I want to hear in just a minute what your thoughts were on content for the day. What, you know, if you had any specific things that stood out, but I got to tell you this, first of all, I have a breaking news report, two pieces of breaking news, actually. One is just within the last hour, a new poll has dropped showing that President Biden's polling numbers have sunk even further. He is now considered to be at a record low approval rating. He's at 38%. And that's amazing, because what that is actually it's a double-digit drop from where he was just 90 days ago. I mean, he was in the 40s just a few weeks ago, and now he's in the 30s, firmly in the 30s, according to Quinnipiac, which is a pretty well-respected poll. So when Quinnipiac's doing it, you know it's a reasonable survey. So that's a negative score down in the double digits, and it's an indication that the Biden policies are failing miserably. I think right now what they're saying is he stands at. Real Clear Politics has him in the low 40s. Quinnipiac, of course, has him in the 30s. His handling of the economy was one of the lowest. His handling as commander-in-chief was very low. His handling on foreign policy was even lower. Oh, my gosh. And his handling of the Mexican border was at 23%. Good Lord. All right. That's mega bad polling right there. The other thing, though, far more sobering that I wanted to get past that polling thing and talk about this is we had a school shooting today. And I'm looking to see exactly where it was. It was in Arlington, Texas, I believe. Yeah, Arlington, Texas, Timberview High School in Arlington. There was a, and apparently they've already caught him. Apparently the teen turned himself in. A fight between kids resulted in one of them pulling a gun and shooting in the school. And I don't think there were, any deaths. I'm looking now, scanning the news stories. This is all breaking just in the last few hours. While we were on the air, but it does appear though that the shooter, let's see here. I'm sorry, law enforcement says multiple people were hurt. Some were transported to area hospitals. Three were taken to hospitals. Two with gunshot wounds who were undergoing surgery. The victims include a 15-year-old boy in critical condition and a 25-year-old man in good condition and a teenage girl in good condition. So apparently we have three shooting victims, two of whom are in surgery. And so we pray for the community in Arlington, especially the families in the Timberview High School area. All right, folks, listen, you want to call in 866-494-9866. Copper, give me your thoughts. Today's content, I mean, we covered a lot of stuff, although there was a ton in there about freedom of speech. Anything jump out at you?
Yeah, yeah, that's the one that has been really impacting me, especially the if you compare how people can scream at congresswomen in the bathroom and record them and stalk them, and yet going to your school board meeting is considered domestic terrorism.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a scary difference.
It's a scary difference. And the thing that really irks me in that whole thing, too, is the notion that this same liberal group, the National Association of School Boards, that they wrote this letter that sparked this reaction from the DOJ, but that same group had as their keynote speaker, what's her name, Angela Davis, who was an extremist activist who purchased the shotgun for her husband or for her boyfriend to use to murder a judge. And she's celebrated by them as a keynote speaker at their annual conference just 2 years ago. And yet right now, it's too scary to be a school board member. It's too scary because people come and disagree with us. And that just gets all under my skin. I mean, buck up for the crying out loud. I mean, and I got to wonder, too. They said, by the way, Copper, that National Association of School Board, and I see this all the time. Like, I used to see, like, you know, down on the floor of the Senate in Montgomery, you'd have somebody who's pro-abortion, and they would get up there and say, I speak for the women of Alabama. No, you don't. You don't speak for my wife. You don't speak for my daughter. You don't speak for Copper. You don't, none of it. You don't speak for any of them. You speak for some. But this Association of School Boards wrote their letters saying that they were writing on behalf of their 90,000 members. And I would bet, though, some of those folks are a little ticked off to have been lumped into that. I'm just curious.
Yes.
But I'm betting.
I have questions.
Yeah.
How is it that the school board and the school board association, which I didn't even know they were allowed to link up like that. That's disturbed. How did they get to be so liberal? Like, did we just fail as conservatives and just not care about the school board and let them all get on it and then they just gatekeep and don't let us back in? Or is there something else going on here?
Yes and yes. You know, the teachers' union, the unions tend to wind up gravitating towards big government and mandates and things that they need to get their way. And, you know, the free market doesn't usually work well in a union mindset. And so when you look at who supports unions in the political world, very often it winds up being the more liberal mindsets, which tend to reside more often in the Democrat Party, right? So that being said, the teachers' union is a union. It's part of that whole process. The National Association of School Boards are a lot of times made up of people that align themselves with the teachers' union, and that's just, you know, there you go. So there's my thought on it. But yeah, and the NEA, which is the National Education Association, which is the national teachers' union, awful in terms of their politics, awful. I mean, wow. And that's the background that I can give you. All right, folks, listen, we're going to take a short break right now, come back and wrap up the day. If you want to call in, we got time for maybe one or two calls. 866-494-9866. 866-494-9866. Don't tell me we covered the issue so well you got no comments. Somebody call on in and tell me what you think. 866-494-9866. We will be right back. Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio. By the way, you can listen to us live everywhere in the world. Go to rightsideradio.org, click on Listen Live, and like I always say, wherever you is, there we is. And by the way, you will find sections of the show. If you want to download the next day a segment of the show in podcast form, send it to somebody, or maybe just rehear a part or a part you missed, you want to catch up on something. If you missed a day, you missed a lot. So rightsideradio.org, you can find all the clips from the show the next day and download them, and that's going viral right now. We've got 7,400 or more downloads just in the first 90 days. That's pretty cool. So, Copper, if you would, go ahead and get clip five ready for me, because I'm going to probably run that one right before we go off the air. But didn't you have a caller? I thought I saw Brian from Huntsville. What did he say to you that was so funny?
Yes. He said, all we have to do is make school board meetings in the women's restroom, and then we have free speech to harass them as much as we can.
Okay, so yes, Brian, perfect. That was that would be like that's worthy of a shout out right there. So yeah, so basically, if they can go and shout and carry on in women's rooms at U.S. senators like Kyrsten Sinema, then surely to goodness we could move the school board meetings to the stalls and be able to shout and carry on all we want to without any trouble. That's an interesting dynamic point. That's what we call a merging or meshing of the news right there. Creating the bigger picture from disparate stories. Listen, Tucker Carlson covered down on some of what I talked about today. And what's interesting is when I do a show and then, you know, I go home and I watch the news or whatever, or I'm listening to something, or for that matter, I'm doing a show with a topic and I look over at the big screen right here in the studio and see the same thing being done on the five or something like that. That's kind of encouraging. But Tucker covered down on this whole issue of freedom of speech and the fact that the DOJ is playing into it. And he had a comment. You know, I tell you all the time, do not stop. You tell the DOJ to pound sand. You tell liberals you're going to come wind up having the meeting, whether they like it or not. You are going to address your children's education. Well, Tucker had a comment on this. He said, you know, that some are saying it's time to abandon the public school system. It's time to bail out and go to the private school system. It's time to have more school choice to give parents the ability to leave the public school system altogether. And I don't agree with that entirely. I'm a product of the public school system. I do believe there should be more of a free market mentality where if your school is failing you, you're allowed to move. I also believe you should be allowed to take your tax dollars and go to a private school if that's better for your child. I don't believe we should abandon public school in general. But Tucker came back around in his comments, and he made the comment that maybe it's worth fighting for, actually. Copper, go ahead and play clip five.
On the other hand, you got to ask yourself, why let the lunatics take control of a system they didn't build? It's not theirs. They don't get to wreck it. Maybe people should stay and fight and take back the schools, which belong to us. They're ours. They don't belong to the teachers union or the National Association of School Boards, much less Merrick Garland, whoever that is. They belong to us, American citizens. Now, the backdrop.
That's such a cogent point. That is such a solid point. The liberals who do not believe in the furtherance of the free market or in the liberties that we love, or anything else for that matter that conservatives stand for, they truthfully did not really build these systems, all right? They don't stand for what we stand for in terms of traditional values. And literally, while they've been in charge, Alabama's 50th in the nation in education. But maybe, just maybe, it's time for folks to begin looking at this as something worth taking back. And I don't mean like, you know, storming the doors and, you know, and throwing them all on their keister. I mean, demanding certain changes, running against them in the next election, ensuring they don't have the ability to corrupt the system any further, because you're going to make sure they're either held accountable or you're going to find people who will go in there and be accountable. Well, let me take my last call for the day. Scott from Decatur. Hey, Scott, Phil Williams on Right Side Radio. What's on your mind? I got about a minute.
Hey, Phil. I just wanted to say that you said you're to the public school system.
Absolutely.
I was too, and I also went to a private school, but it's changed since then. I have kids that I tried to put in public school and had to pull them out because it just was not right.
Well, but see, that was also, they don't want you to have that choice. And Scott, I appreciate the fact you got involved in your kids' education and decided something was right or not, and you took a parental opportunity to move them to a place you thought was better. Liberals don't want you to have that opportunity. So good on you. Thank you for that. All right. I guess we locked in there. Scott from Decatur. Hey, Scott, great call. Thank you for that. And we need more parents, by the way, who are willing to say, that's my child. I am the parent or legal guardian of that child. I will invest myself in their education process. I will see to it they have what they need. I will make sure they do their homework. But I will also go to the people that give them the homework, and I will hold them accountable. and I will go to the school board meetings, and I will check and see what's in the textbooks, and I will ask them why we have social justice reforms built into our education when we're not doing well in reading, writing, and arithmetic. Folks, we gotta have you. We gotta have you. Your freedom of speech shall not be chilled, all right? It shall not be quelled. You go ahead and tell the liberals pound sand, because you do care. This is our nation. And like Tucker said a minute ago, we shall not let them wreck it. We will take it back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Coming up, you got the great one, Mark Levin. He'll be on in a few minutes, and we'll be back tomorrow with you right here at 2 o'clock. Right Side Radio is solid conservative, just plain right.